Welcome to Elevate. I'm so happy you're here with me today, and I cannot wait to share this episode with you. As an evidence-based coach, mentor, and entrepreneur, I'm obsessed with learning and personal development as it's transformed my entire life, as well as those I get to work with. And to be quite frank, it's literally the entire reason this podcast exists, to fuel your growth, gain perspective, and acquire knowledge. So buckle up, friends, you're in for a treat. And as always, thank you for supporting me and the show so we can continue to elevate our own lives as well as those you share this with. Now, let's get into it.
At any given time, more than a third of Americans are on a specific diet with weight loss as a leading reason. Most are going to be disappointed because even when successful, lost weight is frequently regained within a few months. While most weight loss diets can help you lose weight, they are mostly unsuccessful over the long run for a number of reasons. Now, some people don't follow their diets carefully and don't lose much weight even from the start. Others may go off the diet entirely after a while because it's too restrictive or the foods aren't appealing to them. Some may engage in less physical activity as they consume fewer calories. But who hasn't heard of someone doing everything right and still losing minimal weight or regaining lost weight over time? Perhaps that someone is you. Hi, my name is Kate Amichal. I am an exercise science master. I have published research in metabolic adaptation, hormonal adaptation, strength and hypertrophy, all the fun stuff. And I'm currently a master's student getting my clinical psychology degree because I think the problem with weight loss, the problem with sustainability, all of these issues as far as emotional eating, binge eating, restriction, all of our interactions with food come from a psychological position. And so if we can fix the root cause of some of the things that are causing people to behave in this way, we can change their behavior, we can change their mindset, we can change their life. So if you're interested in the realm of psychology, relationships, fitness, business achievements, or just achieving goals in general, having high levels of mental performance, then stick around, hit that like button, subscribe. But today, we're going to dive into why the hell diets don't work and how I can say this as somebody who owns a fitness business. I want you guys to know all the tea. I want to educate you on if you've struggled with dieting and gaining the weight back or really, really being disciplined but not seeing progress, that these might be the reasons why, because having education, having information can help you make better decisions. So I always like to start with a little bit of research, but even when research studies confine study subjects to a research setting with carefully controlled calories, food types, and physical activity, and with intensive counseling, teaching, and monitoring, the lost weight and other health benefits, such as improved cholesterol or reduced blood pressure, tend to disappear soon after the study ends. For example, in a large systematic review and meta-analysis, researchers analyzed 121 trials that enrolled nearly 22,000 overweight or obese adults who followed one of 14 popular diets. Now, these included things like the Atkins diets, Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, DASH, Mediterranean, for an average of about 6 months. The diets were grouped into one of three categories: low carb, low fat, and moderate macronutrient. Essentially, diets in this group were similar to those in the low fat group, but with slightly more fat and slightly less carbohydrates. Loss of excess weight in cardiovascular measures, including cholesterol and blood pressure, while on one of these diets were compared with other diets or the usual diet, one in which the person continued to eat as they usually do, while weight, blood pressure, and cholesterol measures generally improved at the six-month mark. Results at the 12-month mark were, well, disappointing to say the least. Now, while low carbohydrate and low fat diets both resulted in weight loss of about 10 pounds at 6 months, most of the weight was regained within 1 year. People in the moderate macronutrient group tended to lose less weight than those following the other diets overall. Blood pressure and cholesterol results improved modestly at the 6 month, but generally returned to where they started after a year. One exception was noted in the study that reduced LDL, or bad cholesterol, while on the Mediterranean diet persisted at the 1 year. So overall, really healthy diet and healthy fats decreases inflammation. I think the Mediterranean diet style, if it's something that you can stick to, is actually a really great model to follow, but I digress. Other than that, there were no major differences in other health benefits between the various diet programs. So I'm going to stop here and say that whether you're keto or carnivore or vegan, vegetarian, fucking high carb, low carb, it doesn't matter. right? It does not matter. And we need to stop making the diets that we choose so dogmatic. These are not religious things. Okay. It doesn't need to be this like, oh, you're less than, you're worth, you're whatever, because you don't eat the way that I eat. Okay. You guys need to focus on what is the most sustainable diet. And when I say diet, I don't mean program. I mean way of eating that you can stick to for the long term. Okay. Something to meditate on. Effective weight management is particularly important when we consider that 2/3 of Americans older than 20 are overweight or obese. Just let that statistic sit with you. It's absolutely wild. And with the rise in obesity rates and related health problems such as diabetes and heart disease, both of which are leading causes of death in the US, it has become even more critical for us to approach weight loss armed with a keen understanding of what really works and what really doesn't. What really works and what really doesn't. What really works and what really doesn't. Can we start talking about what works long term? Okay, you guys are probably not going to like what I have to say, but you need to hear it, that all of the fad diets that you are chasing, like the research shows us, they don't work long term. And if we're going to play this game, we need to learn to play it for keeps, okay? So let's start with what doesn't work. Now, the What the Hell Effect studies have consistently revealed that dieting usually leads to weight gain, not weight loss. Okay. In a 2013 review published by the Frontiers in Psychology, yes, I always look at psychology and obviously the exercise science research because I care about both. I think they work together. Okay. That's my opinion. That's my perspective. But I've seen it time and time again be fundamentally true with women that I've worked with. So I digress. But the investigators reported that 15 of 20 studies show that dieting predicted weight gain in adolescent and adults of normal weight. Let that sink in. Now, one problem with diets is that once you give into temptation after restricting yourself for so long, you're more likely to binge. Now, this tendency, which psychologists dub the "what the hell effect," undermines attempts to lose weight overall. A 2010 study by psychologists at the University of Toronto demonstrated that this effect in people who believed they had broken their diet. Okay, they studied how this impacts your behavior when you are dieting in general. And this is what they did. So in the study, 106 female students, some of whom were dieting and some of whom were not, all received identical slices of pizza. Some of the students saw a person carrying another slice that was either bigger or smaller than the ones that they got. And others did not see another slice at all. Now, after they ate the pizza, the participants were asked to taste test a range of cookies. Women who weren't dieting and dieters who thought they had eaten a smaller than usual slice or who didn't see a comparison slice ate a small amount of cookies. But the dieters who thought they had violated their diet by eating a bigger slice ate more cookies than everybody else. Now, how many of you guys have been on a diet? Right, maybe you track your macros. This is also why I really don't like black and white stuff when it comes to dieting. Everything operates on a spectrum, okay? My perfectionistic friend, everything operates on a spectrum. It's not good or bad. It's not success or failure. You're not good or bad as a person, okay? Take that in. But when we see that we've overshot calories maybe by a little bit, maybe even 50 calories, like it's not a lot that gets people to go overboard. It's like I had one bite and I have to get back on track tomorrow and I have to be perfect and I have to make up for this. That's a really, really, really bad cycle to be in. Don't do that to yourself. Okay. It's not that serious. Consistency over a long enough time horizon will generate the results that you want. I know you don't like that information because it's not sexy. I can't sell you on that. It's not sexy, but it's real. It's real. If you're going to do this stuff, do it once, do it right, accomplish the goal, sustain it forever, and then never have to fucking diet again. I like that idea. I really, really like that idea. I hope you like it too. But the researchers suggested that these women believed that they had already blown their diet. And so what the hell, might as well pig out on some cookies. And this study and many others like it confirm that violating or even thinking you have gone off your diet is enough to abandon self-control entirely. Now there's another thing called ironic processing. Some diets promise that you'll avoid feelings of deprivation by letting you eat as much as you want of certain food groups while totally eliminating others. The trouble is that when you eliminate your favorite foods, a requirement of most weight loss regimens, that's a no, that's a red flag, like red flag. I need to get a red flag. Red flag. You develop a deeper longing for them. You know, it's like when you were a kid and your mom's like, you can't have my Brussels sprouts. And you as a kid don't even like fucking Brussels sprouts, but then you have to have them because they're mom's and you can't have them. You know, it's kind of like that guy that doesn't want you. And then you want them because they don't want you, even though you know, naturally, if you're being honest with yourself, you don't really want to be with them. It's kind of like you just want what you can't have, that kind of thing. Yeah, it applies to your weight loss goals too. So this vow to avoid things like cookies, cakes, pastas, whatever it might be, right? And you will soon find yourself dreaming about fucking spaghetti, okay? This happens to everybody. It's a psychological adaptation to restriction. Food deprivation, calorie restriction. There are psychological adaptations to dieting, okay? Say it after me. There are psychological adaptations that happen when you diet. We all need to know this. It's very important. It will change your behavior, okay? Now, food preoccupation is an inevitable result of dieting. Again, psychological adaptations here. We're talking about them. Listen in. Okay, psychologists call this phenomenon ironic processing. Suppressing a thought makes it more salient, right? It became famous when the late social psychologist Daniel M. Wegener did a series of experiments, the White Bear Studies. I'm sure you guys have heard of this. If you haven't, I'm going to explain it. In this study, right, he asked subjects to avoid all thoughts of a white bear. Guess what creature relentlessly prowled through their minds? A motherfucking white bear. Okay. So many studies have shown this over the years, right? The people who try to eliminate food groups end up craving those foods intensely. And there's a mountain of evidence that not only do people crave the forbidden fruit, you like that? Not only do people crave the forbidden fruit, they eat more of it when they get a chance to have it. Okay, there's a study that compared eating patterns in 23 normal weight non-dieters who restricted their intake of palatable foods such as donuts and ice creams, and 23 similar people who merely recorded their snack intake. The researchers found that participants who restricted themselves reported craving and eating more treats, whereas those who simply monitored their snacks did not at all. This growing line of research suggests that for most, eliminating foods entirely will backfire badly. In fact, treating yourself to indulgences may help you avoid the pitfalls of craving and overeating these forbidden foods. In a 2012 study, 144 obese men and women were put on a strict low-calorie diet for 16 weeks. About half ate regular breakfast, about 300 calories, and the rest consumed a larger breakfast, about 600 calories, which included something sweet, such as a donut or chocolate, and ate less at dinner to make up for this, so the calories were matched. In the second half of the study, participants tried to maintain their meal plans on their own for 16 more weeks. The participants kept food diaries and continued to receive counseling from a dietitian. After the initial 16 weeks of close monitoring, the small breakfast group had lost a few more pounds than the large breakfast group, 33 versus 30. But in the self-maintenance week, okay, in this maintenance 16-week period, the small breakfast group regained 25 pounds. 25, okay? Whereas the large breakfast group continued to shrink. They dropped an additional 15 pounds. Notably, the small breakfast group reported increased cravings for sweets, fats, and fast foods at the end of the study, whereas the large breakfast group reported reduced cravings in each category. Now, although eating dessert for breakfast is not necessarily the fastest or healthiest route to weight loss, these findings do demonstrate that it is possible for you to have your cake and lose weight too. Now, another thing that we need to be cautious of as far as like why diets don't work is considering the mental fatigue, the mental strain of the efforts to change your eating behaviors and the required attention and record keeping, especially at the beginning. This is always the hardest thing at the beginning, is there's a lot of learning, a lot of tools, a lot of auditing, a lot of reporting, right? To try to understand what your natural selection is and how we can improve that. But focusing too much energy on what you eat reduces your ability to do other, potentially more important things. So studies that examine the mental energy available to dieters versus non-dieters consistently reveal that dieters have more difficulty learning new information, solving problems, and exerting self-control. Read that again. Listen to that again. Watch it back. Watch it back. Okay, overthinking your food choices may also have deleterious consequences for your mental health. A 2010 study in Appetite looked at the mental toll of eating chocolate among dieters and non-dieters. The non-dieters were not particularly distracted by this indulgence, but the dieters who could no longer think clearly, but the dieters could no longer think clearly, becoming consumed with thoughts such as, why did I eat that? What should I eat later today to make up for eating that? What do I need to do to fix this mistake? How am I going to adjust my next meal? Not a good place for your mental energy to go, I'm just saying. A piece of chocolate is not that serious. Another experiment published in 2010 found that women who restricted their calorie intake and recorded what they ate exhibited elevated cortisol levels. Everybody wants to talk about hormones. Everybody wants to talk about their blood. Everybody wants to talk about all these fucking things. Stress, okay? Stress is psychological, it's emotional, and it's physiological. So physical, mental, and emotional stress buckets. You need to be considerate of all three of those things when we talk about stress. Not all stress is something that you have awareness over. You're not always, it's not because you're not sore that your body didn't undergo some stress. It's not because you didn't have a fight with your husband that you might not be feeling or experiencing elevated levels of stress. There are lots of different things that can cause stress in somebody, and everybody's stress thresholds, what I like to call it, like the tipping point for them, is also drastically different. So paying attention to yourself and understanding when you're that battery, that temperature is getting a little bit too hot for you, we need to cool you off. Okay. We need to know how to decompress so that we're not just chronically stressed. It's not good for your health. Okay. Okay. Now, even women who simply monitored their meals without trying to restrict calories reported feeling more stressed, and they ended up gaining weight through this process. So here's the bottom line. For most people, diets not only backfire, but also take a heavy toll on our physical and mental well-being. So now that we've talked about all of the problems, let's now shift into talking about some solutions around how you can actually achieve your fitness goals, especially if you are somebody who might be overweight or obese. We need to get you in a position where you're healthy. You can live a long life. You can feel good in your skin. You can be functional. That's what I care about. The aesthetic stuff, if you want to go after aesthetics, I'm not here to judge you. I've done that. I got the hat. I got the t-shirt. Like, I did the thing. It didn't feel what I thought it was going to feel, but some people have to actually chase those things and find out on their own, which is your story. That's your journey, not mine to judge at all. Do what you need to do, okay? But solution-focused things when it comes to long-term successful weight loss outcomes. So the number one thing, this is why I am so passionate about bridging the gap between psychology and physiology, is that it starts in your head. If you want to improve your body, you must also improve your mindset. Right. And decades of research show that individuals who are dissatisfied with their bodies are less successful at losing weight. You cannot hate yourself into a body that you love. You cannot do it. But you can have high enough standards for yourself that you do it because it makes you better. Not because it makes you smaller. Being smaller is a side effect, okay? But do it because it makes you better. That's why you need to diet, because it will make you better. It will give you more energy. Your cognitive performance will go through the roof. Your natural energy throughout the day, abundant. Your focus, your emotional regulation, your ability to articulate yourself, your ability to set boundaries, to say no to things, to be disciplined, it will amplify your life. That's why you should do it. Not simply because it makes you smaller. That will be a side effect, of course. But if you can do it in a way that makes you better, that you can sustain, right? If the methods are unsustainable, the results will be unsustainable. It's just not, the math ain't mathing with people sometimes. Studies also show that it is possible for anyone to learn to feel good about his or her body. You need to know that. Even if you feel dissatisfied with the way that you look right now, you can get to a place where you feel great. It's kind of like when you go through a really bad breakup and you're like, I'm never going to get over this. My heart is broken forever. And then eventually one day you wake up and you don't even think about them. You're like, oh, I never thought this day would come. Same thing. It will come. But you want to do it the right way. Do it out of self-respect, not self-hatred. In a 2014 study, women with eating disorders, including some who binged or were overweight, received compassion-focused therapy, an approach aimed at reducing feelings of shame and improving self-esteem. Over the 12-week treatment, women who exhibited greater improvements in self-compassion and reductions in body shame were also more likely to develop better eating habits. I'm telling you guys, the reasons that many people, I'm not going to say all of you, right? I do think it's directionally correct, but I have to also acknowledge it's not universally true. I think a lot of women specifically, though I do know men who struggle with this too, your eating behaviors are mostly coping mechanisms, just like alcohol or just like drug addictions, right? These are ways for us to escape. It feels like a place of freedom, a place of bliss for a moment. However, there are negative consequences to doing that, right? Binge eating, overeating is a form of self-harm, which nobody wants to talk about, but it is. You're putting yourself in a compromised position. You are taking years off of your life by treating your body this way. Now, I also want to make it clear, I'm not saying that small is the way. There are plenty of people who are underweight. I was one of them, who were not healthy at all. I'm not saying that health itself has a specific size. But there are definitely body metrics that we need to look at as far as where are you in a healthy range, right? I like to think of it as a range. It's not black and white. Like, oh my God, I gained a pound, now I'm overweight. That's not how it works, right? But there are also internal things that we have to assess to know that you are optimally healthy or as healthy as you could be based on your age, based on your genetics, based on your height and your weight, body fat percentage, Do you resistance train? What is your amount of lean mass? All of these things will play a vital role in your longevity and quality of life long term. So one simple way to improve your self-esteem, according to many findings, is to write positive affirmations on a regular basis. Happiness research has consistently shown that what you focus on, that focusing on what you do like, I have nice eyes, or I have a nice face, or I don't know what you might like about yourself, I've got nice legs, you know, some people have nice legs. And on health rather than appearance, that's why I always say there's a difference between health and wellness and vanity and aesthetics. They're not the same, right? But because the health and wellness industry has been like overtaken with vanity and aesthetics, it's hard to separate the two. But if you focus on the health and wellness side of what you're doing, the aesthetic part of it, the body confidence, the weight loss, all that stuff will come as a side effect, right? The process dictates your progress. If you are committed to it because it makes you better, you will, as a side effect, get stronger, smaller, more fit, more toned, all the things that most people want. But we are taught to focus on the scale and it going down as fast as possible. The problem is, usually as fast as it go down is as fast as it comes right back up. So we know that that approach is not going to work, which means you have to also take on, come on, come here, quiet, come here, patience. Okay, you need to have patience throughout the process. This is not a destination, okay? It's not going to just get there and it's just done and you go back to the ways that you were before. Again, talking about behavior change, talking about emotional regulation, talking about coping mechanisms, talking about behavioral patterns, talking about dysfunctional things and how you outlet or do you compartmentalize things. That you need to look at your overall mental and emotional state of what's making this so difficult for you. Because if it is emotional eating, if it is perfectionism, if it is black and white thinking, you're going to continue to have issues because you're always going to see things as good or bad. Okay, that's not true. And if you can focus on health-related goals, like I want to run a 5K this year, right, that can also help you develop a healthier mindset and self-image focused on your slow improvements over time. I'm training for a half marathon now. I've loved it, right? Not because I expect to lose any weight. I'm actually not weighing myself or tracking anything right now. I'm just doing it because I want to develop better endurance and I want to do it with my mom, right? And so I can see my time improving. I can see how I feel lighter on my legs. I feel great. But any weight loss that I've experienced, and I'll tell you guys like once I finish this whole training session, is not because I was focused on weight loss. It's because I was focused on getting better. I was focused on improving my performance. I was focused on improving my endurance. Weight loss will be a side effect of that. That's it. And I'm pumped about it, but that's not why I'm doing it. So this is one of the most important things. And I know that it's not sexy. So I know you're going to be mad at me and you're going to be like, oh my God, why did I watch this video? You're not telling me what I want to hear. I'm telling you what you need to hear. Okay. Slow and steady wins the race. Point blank, period, end of discussion. Okay. When setting a weight loss goal, it's natural to want to accomplish it immediately. I know you wanted the fucking weight off yesterday. I empathize with that position. I totally understand. But you didn't gain the weight overnight. You didn't get here by looking at a fucking burger. Okay. You got here from chronic overeating. With behavioral patterns, with coping mechanisms, with emotional regulation, with an outlet, with a distraction because you're bored, because you can't be lonely or isolated or, you know, frustrated, negative emotions driving this behavior as a coping pattern for most people, not everybody. Again, it's not universally true, but I would say for most people who've struggled with weight, it comes down to these things. So to maintain what you need to maintain progress and to maintain the results, you need to make gradual and sustainable changes to your exercise routine and to your diet, right? So for example, if you're somebody who enjoys drinking and maybe you drink 5 drinks every weekend, maybe you come home from work and you're like, oh, I need a beer or two. Okay, well, maybe you just focus on drinking less calories, drinking less alcohol. If you buy Coke, maybe you buy Diet Coke. Or if you like Coke and you fucking hate Diet Coke, then maybe you don't drink 5 cans a day, you drink 3. That's sustainable for now. And then 2. And as you do that, you're drinking more water. So, oh, you don't mind water. It's not so bad. Or you add flavored water or whatever you like to do to stay hydrated. And you start to feel better. And you recognize alcohol makes you feel like shit. And then you don't want to drink alcohol like that anymore. But you have to do it in a sustainable position. Otherwise, when you lose the weight, you'll go back to old behaviors and you'll gain it all back. We see this time and time and time again. So again, it doesn't have to be everything all at once. And I think trying to change too many things all at once makes it entirely overwhelming. If it's like you eat out 5 days a week and then you're like, not eating out anymore. You drink every night, not drinking anymore. Sugar's bad. Not eating sugar anymore. Like good luck sticking to that. I'm telling you, it's not going to end well for you. You will be frustrated. You'll end up back at square one, and then you feel bad about yourself. And your relationship with yourself will be compromised because you don't believe you can do the thing that you actually can do. But the perception that you have around the expectations that you've set and the amount of pressure that you're putting on yourself to be able to do it in a certain time is what is keeping you stuck. So you have to let go of that. I know letting go is hard, but you do have to let go of it. And even making small changes such as these may sound like a diet, which I'm telling you to avoid. Like, obviously, I'm telling you diets don't work. But when I say diet, what I do mean is that it has to be the way that you eat. It has to be a way that you can sustain eating. I love fucking ice cream. I'm going to eat ice cream like once a month, once maybe twice a month, okay? I love coffee. I don't like black coffee. I like to put shit in my coffee. I work that in. I'm cool with it. I love dark chocolate. I have dark chocolate almost every day. I'm cool. Right? You don't have to cut out everything. There's no one food that just magically makes people fat. It's not real. Anybody who's claiming that is absolutely fucking stupid. And while what research may suggest, usually mechanistically, not focused on outcomes, but people who watch that shit don't know that, is that what one may suggest is optimal is not always practical. Okay, a bodybuilder who works out in the gym their whole life, that's their fucking full-time job, that's what they do, they have time to fucking focus on this stuff. Take a working mom who's got three kids and a husband that drives her fucking nuts most of the time and tell her that she's got to do all of these fucking things all the time. It's just not happening. It's not applicable, regardless of it's optimal. I can give you the best workout plan that would grow your glutes overnight, but if you can't spend 3 hours, if it required you to spend 3 hours in the gym and you don't have 3 hours to spend, is it practical? No, and then you think something's wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. Okay, but most advice on the internet is not necessarily applicable to people who live real lives and have real demands and do work and do take care of their children and do have relationships or are career-oriented and that takes up a lot of their time. So stop trying to compare yourself to somebody who lives a totally different life than you. It's not fair and it's not valid. I'm sorry, but that comparison is just not valid. You also want to focus on adjusting to a new routine, right? New routines, environment drives behavior drives success. It's all you need to understand. So if your environment, you've got chips on the counter and you've got little M&Ms out there and your little ration cups, like maybe we put those away. Right? Change your environment to change your behavior and understand if you have patterns with behavior. If you are somebody who comes home from work and you're stressed out and immediately you go in the kitchen and then you're like picking out snacks, right? Take a break before you go in the house. Maybe you take a 2-minute walk or you sit in the car and you box breathe for a moment before you enter the house so your stress comes down and then you can think clearly about what you need to do next. And then you can get out of your own way and prevent yourself from self-sabotaging. Most people trying to lose 5 to 50 pounds will benefit from slow to moderate approaches to weight loss. Okay, I know that's not sexy. I wish I had a sexier message for you. I really do. If you've tried everything except for this, just do yourself a favor and try it this way. Let go of timelines, let go of expectations, let go of perfection, let go of it having to be perfect, let go of restricting certain foods or removing certain foods, and ask yourself, how can I improve my relationship with this food? How can I improve my relationship with this style of exercise? How can I improve my stress management? How can I improve my coping mechanisms? How can I move a little bit more? How can I add a little bit more protein? How can I manage my portions of these different things that I enjoy? That will lead to better long-term outcomes, I promise you. I promise you, but delayed gratification is hard for most people. There's a large body of research that supports the idea that making simple, gradual changes to your eating patterns is the best way to promote lasting, not quick, okay, lasting weight loss. Now, you can look at research from a 2008 study which demonstrated that overweight and obese adults who made very modest changes to their daily calorie intake and physical activities lost 4 times more weight than those following regimens that involved more extreme calorie restriction. The moderate group lost 10 pounds in 1 month, and they sustained the weight loss over the next 3 months. Okay, here's another study that approached this idea in 2015. They found that women who successfully modified their diet and exercise habits over time, they also set small, achievable behavioral changes. Oh my God, behavior. We're talking about behavior and psychology and fitness. I know it doesn't seem like they go together, but I promise you they go together. And they also had realistic expectations about their weight loss and were internally motivated, not externally motivated. Okay. Internally, it meant something to them to lose the weight. The women who relapsed or failed to change their habits tend to have unrealistic expectations. lower motivation and self-confidence, and less satisfaction with their progress, meaning they want it and they want it now. They don't want to do the work that would be required for them to have it now, which would probably be eating nothing, which is not sustainable. And then you get frustrated. The scale didn't drop the amount of weight that you thought it should drop. So then you self-sabotage. Of course, you're not going to see progress working that way. If you're working that way, you're getting in your own way. And that's why you're not achieving success. You don't have realistic expectations and you cannot be patient. These are things we need to improve. Okay, because weight loss, fitness, it's not a destination. It's a lifelong relationship that you've got to nurture. You've got to put time into. You've got to put effort into. You've got to put sweat equity. You might cry sometimes. It's a relationship, but it's a relationship that makes you better when you do it the right way. Just like there are toxic relationships in real life with love, there are toxic relationships with diet and exercise. I promise I've seen them. I've even participated in some of them, I'll be quite honest. And some of the most compelling data on effective weight loss strategies comes from the National Weight Control Registry, which surveyed more than 4,000 people who lost at least 30 pounds and kept it off for at least a year. The best tactics, according to the report, included self-monitoring, such as limiting certain foods, keeping track of portion sizes and calories, planning meals, and incorporating exercise into the daily routine. Now, I'm going to pause because some of you guys are going to go, oh my God, you just said don't restrict. Okay, but they said keeping track of portion sizes, okay, and limiting, not restricting, limiting in portions. You need to learn that behavior. You need to learn to interact with your favorite foods because you can't have them and lose weight. Okay, let that sink in. Now, some of this might appear to conflict with research described earlier on the pitfalls of restriction and mental fatigue, but the truth is, to lose weight, it is important to find the right balance. For instance, before making changes to your diet, you need to understand your current eating patterns, which may require considerable thought and attention. Most overweight individuals, when they are not trying to diet, tend to eat erratically, consuming junk food, snacking a lot, indulging in cravings on a whim. So becoming aware of these habits, the good and the bad ones, will allow you to tailor them. And as you begin to make small tweaks to your daily eating, start to plan a few meals you like that you can cycle through on a regular basis so you don't have to think too hard about what you're going to eat every single day. These are tools that you can use to improve your long-term success and remove the mental fatigue of having to plan stuff every day, macro Tetris, plug and chug, over and under, flying by the seat of your pants, and then being frustrated when the scale doesn't move the way that you want it to. Is because in order to be successful in a day, the planning starts the night before. If you can learn that habit and if you can pick it up, you will be successful in anything you want to do. That applies to literally everything. Now, according to this data, people who plan their meals are 1.5 times more likely to maintain their weight loss. That's all I do, by the way. I don't lug my food. I don't track it in and up. I have a plan. I write it on paper. I stick it on my fridge. And I rinse and repeat Monday through Friday because I don't want to think about food. And I want to stay consistent with my diet. Simple. Don't have to think about it. When I'm hungry, I throw it in the microwave. I eat it up when I'm, you know, until the next time I'm hungry. It can be that simple, but it does require some planning. Now, this data also show that limiting the variety of foods you can eat can help you sustain your weight. You don't have to eat the same foods every day, but generally reducing the array of options makes grocery shopping a lot less stressful. Here's another thing that we all need to accept. Okay, this is where people don't like the truth, but I'm always going to tell it to you, and one day maybe you'll listen. But we all know that exercise is essential for all-around health. Yet, study after study shows that working out is not terribly effective for weight loss on its own. When it's combined with better eating habits, however, exercise appears to help people slim down. Right? A 2012 study looked at the effects of diet or exercise, or both, and neither, in a group of overweight or obese postmenopausal women. So for all the women who are in menopause thinking they can't lose weight, listen up. Dieters could consume between 1,200 and 2,000 calories a day, depending on their initial weight, and exercise ramped up to 45 minutes or more of cardio 5 days a week. After 12 months, those in the combined diet and exercise group lost the most weight, about 19.5 pounds. Although the diet-only group was not far behind, losing 15.8. Those who only exercised lost 4.4 pounds, and the control group, who didn't exercise or eat differently, lost 1.5 over the year. So we have to recognize that when we just exercise, this is where I want to kind of explain some of the data that we saw. The people that didn't exercise or eat differently lost 1.5 pounds. So that's, you know, kind of negligible as far as statistical significance. But the group who only exercised lost 4.4 pounds. Okay. Looking at the ones who resistance trained and paid attention to their diet, again, anywhere from 16 to almost 20 pounds. That's a huge difference. So why might that be? And this is what people don't talk about, but exercise has the ability to increase your appetite. And we're really bad at calculating the amount of calories that we burn in any given activity. That's why when your favorite influencer posts their fucking Apple Watch and all the calories they just burned in that workout, they didn't burn that, I promise you. Though it feels good, for sure. However, that can validate making poor food choices afterwards because you've told yourself you've earned it. So this is where having control over your diet is really important. And exercise is supplementary, especially if you want to grow tissue like muscle, if you want to tone up, right? You need to lose fat and build muscle. So resistance training is going to be a part of that process. But again, understanding that sometimes exercise, especially too much exercise, can actually increase your appetite, which can cause you to overeat, which is why doing more isn't better. Doing better is better. And for everybody, this is going to be very different. Exercise has many physiological benefits as well. It even appears to moderate the brain's reaction to pleasurable foods. In a smaller study in 2012, overweight or obese participants underwent an initial brain scan when looking at images of food. When they were put on a six-month exercise regimen, at the six-month mark, the exercises showed a decrease in activity in the insula, which regulates emotions, in response to images of palatable treats. They did not, however, report changes in dietary restraint, food cravings, or hunger, suggesting that the neural effects are subtle, perhaps helpful during weight maintenance, but not strong enough to induce weight loss. So incorporating exercise into your life should be a gradual process. You don't have to run marathons to reap, psychological and physical rewards. Going for a lunchtime walk, biking to work, these are great ways to integrate activity into your daily routine. You can also increase your movements in small ways by taking the stairs instead of riding the elevator or washing your car instead of driving through the car wash. Being disciplined is important, but making exercise fun and sustainable is also essential, right? You can make it fun so that you stick to it. And if you set your life up to do things you enjoy that also make you better, that's a pretty sustainable path. Now, one of the most important things to understand is not to do it alone. Receiving support is key to losing weight, whether it's consulting a nutritionist, a dietitian, a coach, a psychologist, right? Somebody that can hold you accountable and support you through the process and also take the decision-making off of your plate. This is why I'm kind of biased towards coaching. Obviously, I am a coach, so, but not, doesn't have to be me. Just any coach that you feel fits for you, having somebody to guide you and support you and take the decisions off of you while educating you through the process so you can skip all the mistakes that you might make on your own is really critical. Research also demonstrates that the role that romantic partners play in encouraging your weight loss is important. Now, what I've seen as a coach is that men are better able to adopt and stick with healthier eating habits when they receive support and encouragement from their spouse. And similarly, women really want their spouse to be supportive in this, right? Especially because most women are people pleasers. And so if you're upset with them for investing in themselves and trying to prioritize their health because you tell them they should be able to figure it out, and I've actually had this happen, if you're that guy, you're an asshole. If they knew how to do it, they would just do it. Most people know, by the way, what to do. They can't do it. There's an issue bridging the gap from intention to action. And more information isn't going to make that process easier. Again, this goes back to a psychological issue that people just don't want to talk about. And of course, if you're shaming somebody by telling them that they're not mentally tough or disciplined enough, they're going to feel like shit saying, I actually feel like I need support here. And they give up. That's not being a supportive partner, and that is not love. When you love somebody, you want what's best for them. I know I'm ranting, but these things drive me cuckoo. Okay, anyways. So similarly, right, having friends or coworkers or even online weight loss buddies can keep you on track by offering inspiration, praise, and partners in crime. After decades of diet studies, we can no longer ignore the evidence and that the evidence points towards these small, sustainable steps as the best way to lose weight. Now, I know, and I've said this earlier, but that message may not be as sexy or as exciting as the latest fad diet, but the science is fucking clear. Moderation leads to changes that will last for the rest of your life. Creating good habits takes time, patience, and resolve, and you will inevitably encounter setbacks along the way. Again, you will fuck this up, but the key is to never give up. And if you can commit yourself for 6 months or a year, right, you may find yourself on the road to the body and the active way of life that you've always dreamed about. So I know that this hopefully gives you the enough evidence. I wanted to pull as much evidence as I could to make my point today. But diets don't work, and that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. You are totally capable. But if we don't look at what's going on between the ears to get you into a position where you can make the changes that you want and continue, you're going to end up setting yourself up for a lot of frustration and a lot of guilt and shame. And your self-worth, your self-trust, your self-esteem is going to tank as a side effect of that. So if you guys are here today, thank you so much for watching this whole thing. I'll catch you guys in the next one.